The two men stamped and shuffled back and forth, feinting and thrusting and parrying, feeling out each other's strengths and weaknesses, and watching all the time for that momentary gap in the defense that would allow a killing stroke. Sutton thrust lithely at Gawain's gut. The knight slapped the blow aside, and then swept his axe back in a sideways cut that sliced through Sutton's jerkin, and left behind a thick red line of blood to mark its passing. Sutton grinned coldly, and his blade flashed out in a cut Gawain couldn't quite parry in time. The tip of the blade scored a razor-thin line just above Gawain's left eyebrow. Blood ran down past his eye, but he didn't waste time trying to brush it away. The two men fought on, neither yielding an inch. Jordan began to wonder what he would do if Gawain lost. He felt disloyal even thinking about it, but he had to be realistic. Gawain was holding his own for the moment, but he was a great deal older than his opponent, and he just didn't have the stamina to maintain his attack for much longer. Tower Rouge was a long time ago. Sooner or later, he'd start to slow down, and then Dark John Sutton would kill him. Sutton was the best. Everyone knew that. Even as he thought that, the two men locked their weapons together and struggled face to face. Gawain was already sweating heavily after his exertions, and Sutton smiled as he slowly began to force Gawain's arm back against him. The knight struggled to hold his ground against the increasing pressure, his arms trembling with effort, but inch by inch, Sutton's greater strength won out. And then Gawain spat directly into Sutton's face. The duelist's face screwed up with pain, and shocked tears ran down his cheeks as he fought for breath. He lashed out with a sloppy strike. Gawain finally stepped back and looked at the still and bloody figure on the floor before them.
You shouldn't have threatened my Emma. Somebody clean this mess up.
The herald nodded quickly and gestured to two nearby servants. The court slowly resumed its buzz of conversation, its voice respectfully hushed, at least at first. Gawain wiped his axe clean with a piece of rag and then sheathed it again. He moved back to rejoin Jordan and Heather. His sleeves were covered in blood, most of it belonging to Sutton. Heather smiled broadly at him and leaned forward to kiss him quickly on the cheek. Jordan nodded to him respectfully.
That was very impressive, Gawain.
It wasn't difficult, sire. He was a duelist, and I'm a soldier. He never stood a chance.
The servants wrapped up Sutton's body in his own cloak and carried him away. Jordan looked around to see how Dominic was taking the death of his pet assassin, but for the moment he was lost in the crowd. It seemed that the court was just starting to get back to normal.
Announcing His Excellency the Regent Count William Howard and his wife, Lady Gabrielle.
Everyone bowed or curtsied, including the three princes. The regent and his wife ignored everybody and strode majestically through the crowd toward the raised dais at the back of the hall. The crowd opened up before them, making a wide passage for them to walk through. They finally reached the dais and stopped before it to bow and curtsy to the empty throne. Then they slowly climbed the marble steps and took up positions standing on either side of the throne. The regent and his wife stood looking out over the packed court, their faces calm and impassive. Jordan studied them both carefully. Count William looked more like a king than any of the three princes. He was tall and powerfully built, with wide shoulders and a fashionably slim waist. His stance was firm and noble, and there was an unselfconscious dignity in his every movement. He wore his dark, formal robes with grace and quiet style. He was traditionally handsome, with short, dark hair and a neatly trimmed beard. He had a relaxed, confident air that adorned so many aristocratic portraits in country houses, and yet there was a warmth in his eyes and a slightly self-mocking smile on his lips. Jordan thought he'd make a great romantic lead. Unfortunately, in the game he was playing, the regent was one of his most powerful opponents. His wife, the Lady Gabrielle, was a famous beauty. She was tall and slender, with a graceful, willowy body. She wore a long, flowing gown of creamy white with frothy lace cuffs. Her long, tawny hair hung in carefully arranged curls around a heart-shaped, almost childlike face. Her eyes were gray and very large, adding to her helpless little girl look. Jordan wasn't fooled for a moment. He'd seen that look on too many girls in the chorus, girls who spent all their spare time trying to get out of the chorus and into speaking roles, usually via somebody's bed. There was a calm, self-satisfied arrogance in Gabrielle's face when looked at dispassionately. She obviously gloried in being the regent's wife and having all the court bow and scrape to her. It wasn't really surprising. She'd never known anything like it before, even though she was King Malcolm's daughter. Under Redheart law, only the king's sons could inherit the throne, even though the daughters had just as much blood and elemental magic as the sons. This had often been a sore point down the centuries, even to the point of civil war on one occasion, but still the law and tradition held. There had only ever been kings ruling Redheart, never once a queen. The ladies of the royal line were just breeding stock. They had much standing at court, but no political power. In theory, anyway. In practice, it tended to depend on who they were married to. As the regent's wife, Gabrielle wielded more power through her husband than she'd ever dreamed of as the king's daughter. Jordan looked at her thoughtfully and wondered what would happen when she had to give it up.
My lords and ladies and honored guests, I thank you for your patience. I have grave news that cannot be withheld from you any longer. As you know, since King Malcolm's sudden and tragic death, there has been no trace of his will, his crown, or his seal of office. Despite extensive searches of Castle Midnight by all the parties concerned, they still remain lost to us. And without them, Redheart can have no king. My friends, Redheart must have a king. The unreal is growing stronger. Creatures that were once securely contained now stalk the corridors openly. The gargoyles on the battlements are growing restive, and the dead no longer rest in peace. Plants bleed and statues weep. There are voices in the earth, and a wall has learned to scream. The steward is doing her best to cope, but there is a limit to what she can do on her own. Her authority over the unreal stems from the stone, and without a king on the throne, its power is weakened. I have summoned the steward here. Let her tell you what is happening in Castle Midnight.
The steward hurried into the chambers, followed by her apprentice. The herald glanced at them nervously.
Announcing Steward Catriona Taggart and Damon Cord Apprentice.
Once again, the whole court bowed and curtsied, this time including the regent and his wife. Taggart stopped just inside the doors and nodded briefly in reply, clearly impatient to begin speaking. She was short, only an inch or so over 5 feet, and delicately formed. She looked almost frail at first glance, but there was a strength and determination in her raw-boned face that appealed greatly to Jordan. She was in her late 20s, good-looking, in a brisk, undemanding way, with chestnut hair in a style that was functional yet not unattractive. Her stance was firm and uncompromising, and she looked extremely competent. The steward was supposed to have extensive knowledge of the high magic, and Jordan, for one, didn't doubt it for a moment. There was something about her eyes. There was also something about Damon Cord, the steward's apprentice. He was a tall, gangling man who looked as though he had dressed in a hurry, in the dark. His clothes looked as though they might once have been best quality tailoring, but now they were torn, ragged, and filthy almost beyond belief. He was also the biggest and most muscular man Jordan had ever seen. Old scars formed a bizarre tracery on his bare arms, and somewhere in the past, someone had made a determined effort to cut Cord's face in half. The resulting scar stretched from forehead to chin, just missing the left eye, crossing the nose, and nicking the right corner of the mouth, giving him a permanent half-smile. He looked grim, brooding, and not a little crazy. He also looked decidedly dangerous if anyone was ever stupid enough to upset him.
All right, everyone shut up and listen. We don't have much time. There's been a major outbreak of the unreal. I don't know what brought it on, but over the last 2 hours, my staff and I have been run ragged all over the castle, just trying to hold things together. First, the good news. As far as we can tell, no one's died yet. That's it. Now the bad news. The old library is gone. When you open the door, there's nothing there but cobwebs. They look like they go on forever. We sent one man in on a rope. He got 100 yards from the door and still couldn't find a wall in any direction. He also thought there was something in the cobwebs with him, watching. We've nailed the door shut for the time being. I'll try and get the old library back when I've got the time, but I'm not promising anything. And stay away from the musician's gallery over the East Ballroom. There's a new ghost there, and it looks like a bad one. It's got teeth you wouldn't believe. The gargoyles are running loose on the roof, but I've got some of my people up there taking care of it. All in all, we were just about holding our own until I did a routine scan of the castle and discovered there was a pattern to the outbreaks. All the incidents were carefully timed to mislead me into missing one major outbreak. Sometime during the past 2 hours, the unreal broke through right here in the Great Hall.
Blood and Honor is continued on the next CD.